Hello and welcome to the Guardian Film Show, where the forecast is for soaring temperatures and sudden storms. We've got the swords and the sandals, the mad dogs and the murder scandals, and our labours, it seems, have only just begun. Rising like Mercury on this week's show, Nicolas Cage goes off like a Roman candle in the sweltering backwards thriller Joe, and European expats come a cropper on the equator in the Galapagos affair, Satan Came to Eden. But let's start with Hercules 3D, in which the legendary godhead comes rampaging through an ancient realm of CGI monsters and pantomime adversaries. And for their hazardous final labour, the film stars Dwayne Johnson and Ian McShane sat down to face the beast that is known as the Guardian's Andrew Pulver.
Doesn't take a vision to know what's waiting for us up there.
I'd still do on projects like this, go by the old, James Cagney maxim that, you stand there, you look the other actor in the eyes, you say the lines and you don't fall over the furniture. And you're halfway there if you do that. And you've got a certain amount of sincerity and you look at that as a basis for acting. It isn't a bad maxim, that your honesty can, carry you through.
No matter how far you go, man cannot escape his fate. Who are you? Are you a murderer? Are you a mercenary who turns his back on the innocent? We believe in you.
I was interested to hear that you'd wanted to do this project right from the beginning when you started looking for acting jobs. And I'm just sort of interested to know how you felt about the knockbacks then, and whether the fact that you had to wait some time before doing it sort of benefited the final film.
When I first got to Hollywood about 14, 15 years ago, you sit down with the studio executives then, and it was the first project that I had bought up that I wanted to play. It didn't go anywhere at that time. I didn't have the juice to greenlight anything back then. But everything happens for a reason, and I'm glad it did. I'm glad because this version of Hercules, where he is experienced and he's survived, and he had a family who had been murdered. So he's dealing with that. So I just think, when you deal with all those elements in terms of psychologically, but also having a body that looked survived and he had gone through it over a period of years, I can only play it today. I couldn't have played it when I was 28, 29. I mean, I could have. And then, you have a version where, for example, Kellan Lutz puts out where he's just a younger version and it's more a bit more polished. Well, this isn't. So I'm happy that that we weren't able to make it 15 years ago. Happy we made it today.
I'm joined now by the Guardian's Peter Bradshaw and Henry Barnes. Peter, it's not the biggest summer blockbuster or the classiest.
No.
Is that necessarily a bad thing?
No, not at all a bad thing. I quite enjoyed this. I thought it was quite fun. At first I thought it was going to pedantically go through all 12 of his labours, including a yucky and horrible account of cleansing the Augean stables, just him shoveling out the poo. But basically it doesn't. What it does is just says, well, those are the 12 labours. Who knows if they're true or not? Anyway, he's a super tough guy. He's managing this kind of the classical world equivalent of the A-Team, basically, or the Expendables. So he's just kind of cruising around with this mercenary bunch of guys, righting wrongs for hire, and he's hired by the King of Thrace.
It's like a cowboy, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like a sort of Ned Buntline kind of tall tale.
Yeah, exactly. It's a kind of, he's the man who shot the opponents of the King of Thrace, basically, and he's also the head of the Magnificent Seven. So it's sort of all those things together. It's quite fun. I mean, it's entirely ridiculous, but it hangs together okay, and it goes along at a hell of a clip. So I actually thought this was quite fun.
Henry, what do you reckon?
I thought it was rubbish. I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, there was a point where I was thinking, oh, this is lovable crap. And then I thought, no, it is just crap. And I think the problem with it for me is that Brett Ratner is determined to make art, and he's trying to be, he's not just happy just being a hack. He won't just let it be cheap and cheerful and rubbish. He's trying to put emotion and a backstory in there as well. And also, what's wrong with the 12 Labours? They're an amazing story, right? I want to see mythical stuff. I want to see great CGI, and you get none of that here. You just get a bunch of ropey old British actors checking in and taking the
There's wage. A lot of sense of actors who've fallen Absolutely. On slightly hard times.
It's like too. A boneyard for the dinosaurs of the British acting industry.
You say that like it's a bad thing. You say that like it's a bad thing. I mean, yes, there's a kind of classier, more upscale, a more, I don't know, higher ranking IQ movie to be made about Hercules. Of course there is. But this is kind of trashy, but I didn't mind. I didn't get the idea that he's trying to be terribly artistic. I don't think so particularly. He's certainly skirting around. He's kind of getting a free ride off the existing kind of mythic heft of Hercules and kind of laying off the bet a bit. Yeah, I certainly concede that. But I don't see that that we should get kind of miffed by his failing to do the 12 Labours particularly. No, and I have to say, I thought I did enjoy it as a sort of trashy kind of piece of entertainment.
It made me feel almost kind of nostalgic. It reminded me of those kind of real cheap and cheerful sword and sandals films that we watched as sort of kids. I mean, all it needed was a sort of Ray Harryhausen
It's not Jason and the Argonauts, is it? I mean, and that was crap and cheerful, but great as well, and sort of genre-breaking in its own way. And this just, I see what you're saying about the tackiness of it being enjoyable. I just wonder if we've reached our tack quota for the summer already. And I didn't need to see Ian McShane romping around screaming. You know, it's just, there's a level of cheapness that you can take and a level of cynicism, I think, that you can take when you're selling this kind of thing to people. And I wouldn't recommend people spend their money on it, frankly.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you are working for your classical studies A-level and you think it's going to get you points, then no, don't spend your money on it. And maybe you might just want to wait for the DVD or the download and have fun that way. But I don't know. I didn't mind it too much.
Now, tell me, who are you? I am Hercules!
Director Brett Ratner showing us the truth behind the legend of Hercules 3D. We now move from one important historical document to another. This is the Galapagos affair, when Satan came to Eden.
Dora and I are turning our backs on civilization. We have set our hopes on the Galapagos.
Neither of us could have imagined the strange and sinister drama that would be unleashed upon us all.
In 1929, a chilly German idealist named Friedrich Ritter dreamed of starting afresh on the island of Floriana, 600 miles off the Ecuador coast. But hell, it turns out, is other people. The Baroness wants to build a luxury hotel, a visiting film crew wants to shoot a pirate movie, and Ritter's dream becomes a nightmare.
I am highly resentful. We shall resist the establishment of any community.
Henry, considering these are events that happened in the middle of nowhere back in the 1930s, there's an awful lot of first-hand historical archive material here, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's a really full, juicy story, and I think the documentary presents it really well. It's perhaps a little handsome, a little stately, but it's a really great story that's presented excellently. It reminded me a little bit of, there's this book by Eric Larson called The Devil in the White City about the Chicago World Fair in 1893, and this idea of a place being a utopia that you're trying to create, but then there always being that seed of evil underneath. Mm. And it just unravels piece by piece. You try your best to make a heaven in an isolated place, and nothing comes of it. So yeah, it's fantastic, I thought.
Bit of White Mischief in there. We're looking for parallels. White Mischief, yes, bit of Wisconsin Death Trip in there as well.
Yeah, it's also a bit like Paul Theroux's Mosquito Coast as well, from fiction. I thought it was a fascinating story. I'm not sure I agree that it's that well told, to be honest with you. I think it lacked structure and focus, to be honest with you. I could have done without all the talking head interviews with the descendants of the Galapagos people now, because I felt that it was sort of taking away from the presentness and the intenseness and the tension of the story. Yeah, I think that sometimes they weren't quite in charge of the material. But there was such incredible material and such extraordinary cine footage, such extraordinary home movie cine footage, that I wondered, am I being played a little bit now? Is some of this a reconstruction or not? Now, I'm not sure, but there are some extraordinary home movie footage of a close-up of a dead body.
Yeah.
And that, is that for real? I mean, I'm assuming it's for real. And I've certainly no reason to think that it isn't, but as it is real and as it is authentic, I wanted to know a little bit more about the provenance of this home movie footage in each and every case. I mean, there is a separate thing, which is the extraordinary silent movie which this extraordinary French woman tried to make. This woman called Héloïse Bouquet, who passed herself off as a baroness, but in fact was hardly anything more than a Paris shop girl. Yeah. But she was such a sexually alluring siren that she kind of created so much tension, which led to all this foul play. Now, some of this home movie footage, it was great, but I needed to be reassured about where this stuff had come from. How, you know, has it been in a trunk for 40 years? Have we only just discovered it? Mm. You know, in what each and every case, where is it coming from? Having said all of which, yes, what an extraordinary story. What an incredible story. I think it could have been told with more focus, though.
Did that not bother you, the fact that it's at least two stories? It's the murder mystery, and it's the story of this kind of utopia that runs aground, and they do talk to each other, but there was a sort of slight lack of focus at times.
There is, and there's not really any resolution if you're looking for an answer to what exactly happened. But I'm not sure that's too much of a problem. I think I'm personally more interested in the idea of a utopia gone sour. Mm. I'm not sure the murder mystery side of it is almost a tangent to that, and that is interesting enough. But I love this idea that you can go to somewhere with such hope in your heart, and this idea of being a romantic couple going together, and then people enjoy the idea that you've created so much that they follow you there as well and inevitably spoil it for you. Mm.
I am disgusted by your theatricals.
We are appalled.
We consider them intruders.
It was a war.
A long shriek gashed the silence. Everyone seems to have disappeared without a trace. I nearly screamed at the sight before my eyes. I curse you with my dying breath.
The serpents have the run of the garden in the Galapagos affair. Let's finish the show a little nearer to civilization in the backwoods of Mississippi, right by the rail tracks. Nicolas Cage stars as Joe. But where's he going with that gun in his hand? The trees are sickly and the men are falling down. David Gordon Green's bloody cut of Southern Gothic casts Nick Cage as a four-square lumberman who takes a troubled teenager under his wing. But Joe, it turns out, has troubles of his own. He's got a hair-trigger temper and the walls are closing in. Sooner or later, Joe's gonna blow.
Peter, I need a film like this every now and again to remind me what a good actor Nick Cage can be.
Yeah, he's a terrific actor. I think it's his best performance for quite a while. It reminded me a little bit of his performance in Bad Lieutenant, when Werner Herzog's Bad Lieutenant. It's a fascinating kind of return to a certain kind of movie making from David Gordon Green. This is one of the weirdest sort of auteur detours in history, in a way. I mean, he started off with, when he was just 25 years old, with this remarkable kind of quasi-Terrence Malick film, George Washington. Mm. Such a fantastic film. And then he did a few more films like that. And then, without any segue, suddenly made this lurch into making broad comedy.
He did Pineapple Express.
He did Your Highness, which incidentally I thought was very funny, much underrated. He did The Sitter with Jonah Hill, all of which were, I think, photographed by his DOP, Tim Orr, who at the time, of course, was credited with creating this wonderful Malickian glow. And he's taken his team and just made frat boy comedies and seemed to be making that his new career. And now he's shunted the points of change and he's back on the Terrence Malick rail. I think it's kind of fascinating. What I think is brilliant about Joe is there is a hint of comedy. There is this weird moment where they both go off drunk together, and Joe teaches his new kind of pseudo son, played by Ty Sheridan, how to look fascinating, how to smile through emotional pain. And it looked like Nick Cage was giving him a kind of improv class in the way he acts. Mm. I thought it was so funny and so weird and distinctive. I really like this. I found it very absorbing. I think it's his best movie since George Washington. Yeah.
Peter's talking about the comedy, but there's an awful lot of kind of bloody menace in there as well.
There is, yeah. And it does that in a way that isn't too base, I think. It does it in a quite subtle, sensitive way. And it's great, this film, because they've taken the rural environment of America and made it slightly crazy and slightly unhinged, but in a way that's believable. There's been a lot of that recently, things like Eight Them Bodies Saints and Two Gates of Sleep, where somehow the countryside is something to be afraid of. And these urbane filmmakers are coming in and making these dramas about gun-ho people because they don't really understand
them. It's a bit of tourism.
Yeah, but you get the feeling, partly through the casting, that David Gordon Green knows exactly these people and
also
he knows
where
they come from.
You've got Nicolas Cage, who's the absolute Hollywood insider, and yet he does seem to sort of fit in this environment. He looks totally convincing.
And he's really great when he calms down. You forget with Nick Cage that he's fantastic when he just lets himself be still a little bit and stare at things and not do the kind of gurney, shouty thing that you get in Face Off and other films like that. And then there's a fantastic performance from Gary Poulter, who's this homeless guy that the director found on the streets in Austin and brought in and sadly died after the film was made. But it's just a supremely naturalistic performance.
It's
probably because he was living it
as well.
Yeah, he's terrifying. He's the main baddie. But you don't often get that kind of humanity, I think, in this sort of film, because they're usually city people coming into a country environment making something that is a little bit patronising.
You could be known as the snake god.
David Gordon Green's Bullish Joe bringing this week's round of movie violence to its close. I think we escaped largely unscathed. My thanks to Peter Bradshaw and Henry Barnes. Thanks to you for watching. We're taking a break next week, off on our annual holiday together to Catherine Shaw's villa in Marbella. But we'll be back a fortnight from now. See you then.